Hey, good day, Brittany. Just a quick check-in. I've been getting a lot of questions from many people, all asking about the voice. So in this episode, I'll give a brief rundown of my thoughts on the voice. Palana, enjoy.
Oi, 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 oi. Ngana pita, kone la podcast go.
Okay, so there have been a few people calling for a legislative approach to voice to parliament, a voice to the executive. And I've not actually gone into the detail of what they're calling for, but I'm looking at the general principle. And I think some of this comes from fear. Fear that we're not going to be able to get the referendum passed in its current form. Fear that we cannot trust that we will get a fair and equitable outcome from the Australian people in the voice in its current form. And a lot of these fears are well grounded. You don't have to go very far. You look at the treatment of Stan Grant, one of our most preeminent and public voices, who effectively gets howled down by a rabid mob of racists. Adam Goodes, arguably one of the best footballers of all time, howled down by a rabid mob of racists. Is that truly the legacy of Australia? Is Australia so blatantly racist, so blind to this racially biased perspective that they hide it away under all these nuances and representations, things like talking about attacking the ball, let's use football analogy. Although you can't really use that when you look at Adam Goodes, a man who was so outstanding in his field. There's very few that could ever come close. And yet, the only way he could be taken down is the racism of a child. And where do these children get racism? From their adults. So these are very serious questions, and it strikes too an inherent, fundamentally inbuilt, racially grounded, racially biased perspective that's built into the socialisation of Australians, to the extent that most Australians are blind to it. So that's not to say that we should be talking about the voice from a racial perspective, because there are many voices out there of Indigenous people and non-Indigenous people, each saying and holding firm views of their own. And each would have substance, I would hope, to their views, substance built on well thought out and articulated positions. And I, for one, these are my thoughts on The Voice. At the very fundamental level, I believe The Voice is a compromise. The true Australia that we need to aspire to is a republic built from the ground up with proper relationships established with First Nations and the various settler states, a true federation that reflects and represents the diversity of Australian First Nations, Australian settler states, and then the modern Australian people. This is a possibly quite radical concept, especially given that we've only just had the coronation of our new king, King Charles. But I bet if we all sat down together, we sat down with King Charles, he would actually work with us to build this brave new nation built on the foundations of equity, justice, inclusion. So that's my view. I think amendments to the Constitution, recognition campaign, even these treaties that are being articulated at the state-by-state level, each of these fall short of a real, true partnership between the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander nations, the settler communities and the settler states formulated into a federation through an entirely new constitution. That's where I feel we should be going. Now, I had a Aboriginal colleague and friend offer a comment that I was not delusional. There was this term that he used. A utopian. That was a utopian dream. And for the moment, we need to work with the reality of what we have. And I think that's where some of the public commentary by Aboriginal people, they're very fearful that the referendum will be lost. And so they're coming forth with compromises. But I think, as Marcia Langton pointed out quite early on in the piece, there have been a long history of Aboriginal people articulating and seeking to set out a relationship with the settler state. Each time these victories were hard fought and hard won, we need to go through the courts. We need to find the legal loopholes. Because never in all of these interactions has the Australian government, state or federal, freely given jurisdiction, authority, and governance to the First Nations of Australia. And this remains the fundamental problem. There is a fear in the Australian state that their illegitimacy, the fact that the foundation of Australia is illegitimate under international law and the laws of England, is always covered over and wrapped up with legal reflections on radical sovereignty, the assertion of radical sovereignty by the Crown, or the assertion in through research that Indigenous sovereignty is not the same kind of sovereignty as exercised by political entities like the Crown in Australia. And they hold sacrosanct this little puddle of power and defend it from all comers. And what you need to realize is Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are on an intergenerational journey, a journey to claim back rightfully what's ours, but do it in such a way that is inclusive, that does not other Australians. And this is a thing that probably has been not recognised by the general public. But the Australian campaign, this Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people's campaign for the recognition of sovereignty and jurisdiction, has been one done in such a way that we recognise, we support, and we work with the settler peoples. Unfortunately, many of the settler peoples fail to recognise this spirit of goodwill, this generosity of spirit, because many continue to be blinded. And sadly, many are not educated. We don't have a education system in Australia that empowers individuals to make up their minds, to understand what is justice, to understand what is right, to understand basic principles of democracy. Equity and justice. And so when we take things like the referendum for a voice to Parliament, to the Australian people, we are effectively throwing pearls of wisdom into a swine pit. And sadly, that's where many people reside. Through the deliberate policies of education and programming by the government. This might sound pretty harsh, and I don't want to be negative and harsh, because The reason I'm doing this podcast is I have been approached by so many people, each asking me, Cato, what is your thoughts on The Voice? How should I vote? My first response, of course, is, your vote is your vote. And that's one of the fundamental principles and values that we hold as a democracy. And congratulations on seeking to be a conscientious, educated voter. For asking the right questions, for reaching out. And so, in summary, my top headline points are, we have not properly articulated the relationship between First Nations and the settler states through a republic, through a new constitution. The voice process is a compromise, and it's a compromise built around key learnings through our intergenerational project of seeking to carve out our place in modern Australia against all odds. And so there have been experiments. The 1967 referendum resulted in Aboriginal people being counted in the census of Australia, and by extension, being counted as citizens of Australia. That gave the federal government a level of responsibility in looking after Aboriginal affairs. And unfortunately, the 50-odd years since has been a tit-for-tat bucket swapping, cash swapping exercise between state, federal, and even local governments. Each looking to reduce their expenses in Aboriginal affairs, increase their income from Aboriginal affairs, and then spend the money with poor decisions, with no net results. That has been every legislative structure of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander affairs in Australia since the beginning. And so the big issues like the gap. We've had 20 years of focus on trying to close the gap. That gap in some parts has changed, but in other parts there's a massive big hole. And a lot of these massive big holes can be traced directly back to bad, poor, ignorant decision making by politicians and bureaucrats at state and federal levels. The nature of our democracy is such that people get elected to parliament. Each electorate, I think, is roughly about 100,000, maybe 120,000 people. The parliamentary representative, often from a political party, they align around an individual who becomes the Prime Minister. They come to Parliament with a reform agenda, They come to Parliament with their own inbuilt, inherent biases. And more often than not, they come to Parliament from a Eurocentric perspective. And so their solutions, their answers to the problems facing Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples are coloured by this lens of Eurocentric bias, inherent racism, and bare, ugly ignorance. And it is in that space that these policies are laid out. ATSIC, for instance, the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Commission, some may argue about nepotism and other things, but during the time of ATSIC, the employment of Aboriginal people in the public service was quite high. The involvement of Aboriginal people in decision-making through the ATSIC regional councils and their wards was quite high. And it took a thought bubble from a person who is now one of the most radicalized right-wing politicians in Australia. His thought bubble, when he was a leader of the Labor Party of all places, brought about the demise of an institution which was legislated and which created an opportunity for self-determination amongst Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. In the space of 6 months, ATSIC disappeared. The Conservative government of the day went out and called in all the not-for-profit NGOs, everything from the Samaritans to Centrecare to, I'm not picking on these organisations, but all of these, Smith family, whatever, those kinds of organisations, the Red Cross in Kalgoorlie, they brought the Red Cross into Kalgoorlie. They launched a military intervention in the Northern Territory. This is the rule of the executive. Through ignorance and inbuilt bias, they have the power to make these decisions that exclude Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, that diminish the lives of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. And that effectively is what the voice is about, is to create an opportunity for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples to have a system in place that is constitutionally protected, based on a referendum of all Australians, protected by the Constitution, to be able to advise the Eurocentric Parliament of how their policies will affect the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples of Australia. And in a nutshell, that's all it is. But the lessons of the past, of history, has shown that these institutions can only be protected if it's enshrined in the Constitution. And if it's enshrined in such a way that it then has a resonance with the executive and with the bureaucracy. And this is the most important point. The resonance is built on the power of the Australian people. That's what this referendum on the Voice is. It's the voice of the Australian people, the power of the Australian people, informing the governments of the day and the bureaucracies of the day that the Australian people expect a fair go for First Nations peoples in Australia. And on top of that, the Australian people will be saying to the government, bring the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples into the tent to make, give advice, not to make decisions, but to give advice on your policies that will affect them. That's the key message. The Australian people are responsible for the treatment of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples in Australia. And I would suggest that most Australians are appalled by the position of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples in our society. And most feel marginalised and disempowered because people behold the government to be all-powerful. But the exercise of the voice is asking the Australian people to tell the Australian government, this is our minimum standard of how we expect you to treat Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, and to listen to them. Stop dismissing them. Because who is better informed to contribute to decisions about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples? Clearly, it's Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. So that's my little rant. I hope it makes sense. It's not the fix-all for everything. If it gets up, it gets up. If it doesn't, it won't. And just know that the spirit of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples in Australia will continue to seek a relationship with the settler state that is built on equity, that's built on justice and repatriation. I would hope that we join hands and work with our dear King Charles to develop a Republic of Australia that empowers each of us, that celebrates our diversity and includes all of us. But that's my utopian dream. And for the moment, the compromise is the voice. Bolana, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Share it if you think your friends or family or colleagues might want to hear some of it. And otherwise, look forward to you exercising your voice, your part of democracy, and voting in the referendum for the voice. Bolana, Molanagu.